you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, members of the Economic and Monetary Committee, members of Parliament, media, and everybody else. Good afternoon. My submission will be about foreign investment and the rules applicable to when foreigners or multinationals invest in Southern Africa. I've only this morning received the conditions of the portfolio committee. So if we can allow this under economic development, I'm happy to proceed with your permission, Madam Chair. My name is Paul Krier. I'm a researcher at the Trilaw Center for Southern and Eastern Africa, TRALAC for short. Our aim is to build capacity in Africa and help the government to integrate in the global economy and understand trade issues better. My submission will be on a very technical nature, so I would hope members would indulge me, but I will try and make it as straightforward as possible. It will focus on a very niche area of the law, but nevertheless a very important one when considering the access and treatment of foreign investors or multinationals. It really concerns the relationship between international obligations South Africa has made at the multilateral level and what is happening beyond our own borders in our own domestic market. When I talk about the multilateral level, I specifically refer to the World Trade Organization and the obligations arising from these negotiating rounds. South Africa has been a prominent player in multilateral trade relations, being an original contracting party to the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, which was signed in 1974, and also an original founding party of the WTO following the negotiation of the Uruguay Round in 1995. From the conduct and involvement of South Africa since the inception of the WTO, it can be argued that we are that active participation and involvement in the activities of the WTO is very much part of the policies and approach of the new South Africa. During the hearing of the Competition Tribunal, mention was made of the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, which specifically deals with trading goods, and the TRIMs, the trade-related investment measures, which deal with investment measures that restrict or distort trade. These obligations from these multilateral instruments may have an impact on how foreign investment is treated, but my submission today doesn't intend to deal with the gaps or the TRIMs. My submission will rather deal with the General Agreement on Trading Services, which was the first multilateral agreement to cover trading services. Traditionally, the multilateral arena only, the multilateral relations only covered trading goods. Since 1995, it's also covering international trading services. The GATS, the rules regulating international trading services, really consists of two parts, general rules and then specific rules that are set up in the schedules of specific commitments. These are annexed to the agreement and form an integral part of the framework. South Africa submitted and agreed these schedules of specific commitments during the Uruguay Round from 1986 to 1994. This schedule represents the liberalization commitments and limitations that countries have undertaken with regards to the entry of foreign investment and also how these foreign investments are treated once they have entered the country. These schedules cover the entry, it covers the treatment of foreign suppliers, but an important exception is that it only binds the countries to the extent and in the areas that they've indicated in the schedules. Although the GATS does not prescribe a certain minimum level or scope of liberalization, South Africa took wide-ranging liberalization commitments during the negotiation of the schedule. They've made commitments in a number of services sectors, including business services, communication services, construction services, engineering services, distribution services, environmental services, financial services, and tourism services. South Africa made commitments in 91 out of a possible 160 sectors, which were more than any other African country and also very high compared to other developed countries. The gaps in schedules were approved by Parliament under the interim constitution on 6 April 1995. Now for the interesting technical stuff. This is what South Africa's schedule in the distribution sector looks like. If you look on the slide, and this, just for some background information, this schedule is different for each of the countries. Each country has submitted and agreed these schedules based on their own economic objectives and their own economic constraints. So no two country services schedules are the same. The schedules are compiled using an international classification system to ensure that these commitments are systematically structured and that it's easy to compare and that there's a consistency in stipulating these commitments. So according to the classification list, there are 12 core sectors, of which distribution services is one. The others are business, communication, construction, engineering, education, environment, financial, tourism and travel, transport, recreation, culture and sporting, and other services sectors. These 12 core services sectors are also subdivided into 160 subsectors. And as you can see from the slide, the subsectors that South Africa has committed is B, wholesale trade services, which is referenced as CPC 622. Now, the CPC is a reference to the United Nations product classification list, which contains about 1,000 lines. So during the negotiations, that was decided by the countries that it would be too comprehensive. So the list that we currently use is really a condensed version of that CPC list. But the CPC list is always referenced there to give you greater clarification and details about what exactly we are talking about. So you see the subsectors is also trade services, the retailing trade services, and then also the franchising services. You also see that there are, for each of the columns, there are also four numbers. They refer to the modes of supply, and that is how international trade services is classified. Just briefly, mode one refers to the cross-border supply of trade services. For example, an architect drawing up plans and sending it electronically to his client in another country. Mode two refers to the consumption abroad, meaning when a consumer, most likely a tourist, moves to another country to consume the services in another country. And mode three, which is really a relevant mode for our purposes, is commercial establishment, and that concerns the establishment of a foreign supplier in the domestic market. And if you look at the definition of mode three, it also includes the acquisition and maintenance of a juridical person. And then mode four concerns the movement of persons, which is when a worker moves to one country to go and work in another country. You also see there are three columns. The first one, of course, like I said, is the classification of the service activities. The second column deals with the limitations on market access. And that really deals with the entry of foreign service and service suppliers into the domestic market. The relevant article states that each member state must accord services and service suppliers of any other member treatment no less favorable than provided under terms, limitations, and conditions specified in the schedule. Now, that means that if investors from, for example, Japan and China must be treated the same. We can't have a different set of obligations for China than we have for Japan, and investment is regulated under the conditions that we set out in our schedule. So the first one deals with the entry of the foreign investor. The second one, the second column on the right hand side, deals with the limitations on national treatment. And that is really how the foreign supply is treated after it has entered the domestic market. It basically demands that the member state treats foreign suppliers and foreign services no less favorable than it treats its own suppliers and services. Now, like I said, if a country has not permitted a certain sector or a certain subsector, they don't have to take any commitments in that certain sector. But in the instance of South Africa, they've committed or scheduled the sector of distribution services together with a number of other services, which means that the entry of the foreign investor or the multinational must happen in line with what's set out in the schedule, and once it's into the country, it must be treated in line with what is set out in the schedule as well. And you can also see that for each mode of supply, the commitments undertaken range from none to unbound for any of the numbers of the mode of supply. Now, if a country decides that there are no limitations or no restrictions in a mode of supply, to enter none. So if we look at the schedule, it basically says that South Africa has indicated none in modes 1 to 3 for all three of the subsectors, which mean that they've committed to open up this whole sector to foreign competition, and they've committed not to maintain any restrictions against foreign suppliers or the treatment of foreign suppliers once they're in the market. So these are really the commitments made by South Africa at the multilateral level, and the government has the duty to respect the obligations that they've made here. Now, maybe you want to know what does distribution services have to do with the matter before us, and you'll see if you look at the CPC classification list, distribution services is defined, and I'm just going to read from the middle of that paragraph. It's defined as principal services rendered by wholesalers and retailers may be characterized as reselling merchandise accompanied by a variety of related subordinated services such as maintaining inventory of goods, physical assembly, sorting and grading goods in large lots, breaking bulk and redistribution, delivery services, refrigeration services, sales promotion services rendered by wholesalers, and services associated with the retailer's business. For example, processing, subordinated to selling, warehousing, and garaging services. An important observation that we made in view of these elements is that distribution service really relates to the distribution of physical goods. And that's also the view that has been held by the WT appellate body. So I think we can accept that the distribution services really relates to the physical distribution of goods and also inventory management and supply chain management. So, like I said, this is really the commitments that South Africa has made in the distribution sector, and South Africa has an obligation to ensure that the current and future regulatory framework is in line with the commitments made in the gas schedules. Now, if, for instance, the government imposes a preferential quota for a company to source a certain amount of products in the local market, that will be in conflict with what South Africa has committed in its schedules. And if South Africa introduces a domestic measure that's in conflict with international obligations, any agreed WTO member state has the capacity to submit a claim under the WTO. And South Africa will be bound by this dispute settlement mechanism by virtue of being a member of the WTO. So, WTO practice really relies on the presumption that member states comply with international obligations in good faith and avoid behavior that violates international law. The submission was just to make the committee aware of the existence of the GATT schedules and the impact they can have on foreign investment and the treatment of foreign investments once they enter the market. As I mentioned earlier in the presentations, there are also other important sectors such as telecommunications, finance, construction, and tourism, which is also be committed, and any broad measure will have to consider the extent of the obligations that the countries have made. The result is that South Africa cannot deny market access for foreign suppliers in these committed sectors or discriminate them except if they've specified some exceptions. This was approved by Parliament in accordance with the Constitution's binding future governments these obligations. So are there any solutions? I'm going to conclude with that. The obvious one is to design investment measures in line with our international obligations or with in line with our international commitments. In the case with the procurement example, it would be easy if the procurement quotas are imposed on everybody in the sector and not only on one of the parties. So there won't be any discrimination if that is imposed on all of the parties. There's another option as well. There's a formal process of notification of schedules that is prescribed in the GATT. So if South Africa wants to change its commitments in the schedule, it can do so under a formal mechanism. And thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Mr. Paul Kruger for this information. That's what I can say. I don't know if there's any member who would want to get more information related to the submission. Mr. Van Rooyen?
Thank you very much. Just a quick one. What are our compliance status in this major issue? But also, what are the envisaged challenges as we intend to conclude this process? Thank you.
Mr. Kova, you may respond.
In general, our international or domestic regulatory framework is in line with our international obligations. But like I said, the danger comes when we violate these international commitments. As soon as we violate these international commitments, it will really be an issue of the aggrieved WTO member taking us to international dispute settlement under the WTO. So it is not really something that concerns us domestically, but we are bound by the WTO dispute system because we are supported by the WTO. So as soon as we contravene one of these obligations, you know, then there might be a dispute settlement case and there might be high costs involved. But at the moment, we are in line with what we've committed internationally in terms of the trade and services rules.
So, just for interesting, what led you to clean up this submission? Because of the advent or in the particular need that you, before you saw that maybe you needed to close?
Well, I would say if this process is maybe intended to consider future investment measures and a future investment code, I really just wanted to make the members aware of our international obligations and the dimension and the impact that we have if there is broad investment measures or specific investment measures in certain sectors. Because the international rules that can have impact on that, and at the end of the day, that could be even costly if the government is not aware of the obligations that with the multilateral level.
I would say, maybe moving and with your question, is there any other institution that is embarking on the same study, or is this the only institution that we have? Because for us to make a scientific analysis of the input and be able to have full understanding, we need to have comparative. only institution, then I rest my case. But if there is another institution, then I believe that we have a responsibility of inviting another institution so that we have holistic understanding of these, of the same inputs and the limitations that we have and as a country. But if I were to make, I have two questions on the last page on the conclusion. The second bullet point and bullet point number five. If, for instance, the government imposes a provincial procurement quota, such measure would be directly in conflict with what South Africa has agreed in the schedules and the capacity to submit a claim under the group settlement, and the rest, together with the second one from the bottom, and deny market access or discriminate against foreign suppliers and so on. That would mean in all conditions that the country cannot say no to foreign suppliers if they supply products of a quality that is not acceptable to the country. I just want to meet, I need a clarity on that based on those accusations of the country.
Thanks, Babunga Nyaman, can you switch off your mic? Thank you. Madam Tuleman,
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. And we welcome the input. I just want to check whether you can say or give any advice, let's say when it comes to tariffs, when we compare the foreign foreigners, let's say the regional one, which is Africa, and the other countries. Do you have any advice
when we compare the
tariffs of these the regional and the former as well, if there is any?
Thank you.
Mr. Yes, Chairman, just to comment to say, in as far as the major concern, basic here is to ensure that whatever benefit the country, And here the member of Malaysia talked about the requirement to consider that the medical aid case is particular reference to the contribution to the social economy or the development of the particular country. That's a major concern. If whatever that is taking place will benefit the country economy higher, but this draw can ever particular country.
Okay. I guess you got the question.
Thank you, Jeff. Maybe we just pause at the Malaysia and their schedule of commitments for a moment. Like I said, each country has committed a different schedule of commitments based on their sector-specific objectives and their sector constraints. We fully liberalized the sector of distribution. That is what we've agreed in the schedules, and I'm only presenting the law as it stands. It's not really my opinion. That is what we've committed at an international level, and that is the effect of the commitments that we've made. If you look at Malaysia's schedule, Malaysia is actually a very interesting study because foreign suppliers in the distribution sector, like supermarkets, hypermarkets, and department stores, coming into Malaysia have to comply with a long list of discriminatory measures, including the obligation of these supermarkets and hypermarkets to reserve 30% of their exports to products that was manufactured by locally owned companies. Okay, so the question would be, why would Malaysia be allowed to do something like that, but South Africa is not allowed to do something like that? And that boils down to what we've committed in our schedules during the gas negotiations, and why we've made such liberal commitments under the gas. We can only speculate upon that. But that was maybe after our readmittance into the global economy, and I think the government really wanted to make big strides in liberalizing our trade and trying to be integrated with the economy as quickly as we can. So for that reason, we've liberalized certain of our very important sectors, maybe to attract foreign investment. This can be compared to the schedule of Malaysia, which restricted the access of foreign suppliers. You can see they've made certain restrictions on the legal entities, on the equity structure. They said that foreign equity shall not exceed 30%. That means that 70% of the supermarkets and hypermarkets must be owned by locals. They can do it because they've specified that restriction, but we haven't done anything like that. We fully liberalized our whole distribution services sector, which means if we try and impose conditions like Malaysia does, we will be liable for dispute settlement under WTO, and that could be very costly. And then just with regards to the tariffs, tariffs really fall under trade and goods, which falls under the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade. So that's really dealing with trade and goods. And I've tried to leave that alone because that can also be very technical and try to focus more on the international trade and services, because while the GATT really deals with the products itself, the services, rules of service also deals with the services suppliers. So the GATT doesn't go that far. The GATT doesn't deal with the manufacturers themselves. It only deals with the products that they manufacture. But the GATT is much wider in the sense that it also deals with the services, but also the services that these the industries supply. So there's a small distinction between that.
Obviously, I wanted to say to Mr. Wanyama that it is dependent on a response from individual companies or organizations. And in this case, TRALEC responded and then coming up with a presentation. Obviously, if the committee feels we might need another view from, you know, just as a work benchmark or whether it's benchmarking or comparison, then that's the decision of the committee. Yes. Exactly. That's why I'm saying he cannot respond to that one thing. The committee to respond. Thank you very much. On the issues raised.
Yeah, the other one I wanted to address for the benefits is that that is what we've committed, and there is a process which you can follow to withdraw these commitments. So we will have to go to the international forum, inform them of the amendments that we want to make, and then we can start discussions on compensatory measures for the withdrawal of these commitments. That's unfortunately the only way to kind of specify restrictions like Malaysia has done, despite the quality of the projects or despite any other economic measures. So we can go through that process, but it's a formal process that that we'll have to follow. That's been provided.
On the countries, how can a country discriminate? I don't remember the question well. Did you get the answer on that one?
Yeah. If a country can discriminate if it listed the restrictions in its schedule. A country can discriminate if it didn't commit that certain schedule or that certain sector, or a country can discriminate if it has left a certain sector unbound. As you can see there, number 3 in the limitation market access states unbound. That also means that in that sector they are free to discriminate or maintain restrictions against foreign suppliers. So there is possibilities, but that is a process that has happened since 1994, and this is the commitments that we've made, and we have to deal with these commitments as best we can. And like I said, there are obvious solutions. There are exceptions, but I mean, that exceptions will be decided at the WSB settlement system, so there's not somewhere where we want to go. We don't want to take it to that leap. I mean, this is something that we have to be aware of, and we can try and accommodate what we've committed at the international level as best we can by, you know, designing the measures at the domestic level.
Okay, I don't think South Africa has done anything on the stuff so far. We haven't, and thank you very much for the submission. I think going forward as a committee, we will definitely look into this and the issues that you've raised, especially around compliance to our own commitments and so forth. And I think so far South Africa has been very responsible. And where we not, we have a very democratic country, and anybody who feels really we do not, they let the authorities do attention. And as a committee, obviously, it's our responsibility to ensure that we got it in some of those issues. Thank you very much for the submission. The next presenter will be Nomsa, and we'll be getting Mr. Jim will be presenting on behalf of Nomsa. An amended presentation has been circulated.
Thank you, Minister.
Over to you, Mr. Chairman.
I nearly slept in frustration.
I'm glad you didn't.
The National Union of Meteorologists of South Africa, NUMSA, has membership of over 250,000 in the engineering, metal, white goods, packaging, and automotive industries, among others, who have an interest in this matter. Our opposition to the proposed Walmart must-match measure must be understood and located within a broader economic, political, and legal context. South Africa's biggest challenges by far are its massive levels of unemployment, poverty, and inequality. Government has clearly placed finding a solution to these three core challenges facing South Africa at the top of its agenda. In reiterating government's commitment to this challenge, President Jacob Zuma said in his inaugural statement of the national address in 2009, the creation of decent work will be at the center of government policies. In the submission before you, we have tabled and identified problems and challenges that make this measure one that is completely against the objective that we have set ourselves as a country, particularly in relation to the eradication of the triple crisis of unemployment, poverty, and inequality. Were some of these challenges that require closer interrogation? What are some of these challenges that require closer interrogation insofar as Walmart deal is concerned? No government in the world that finds itself with such huge developmental challenges as ours, and that has committed itself to a new economic growth path to drive industrialization, would allow a deal such as the Walmart must-match measure to go through. More especially, if this is government that is serious about retaining and defending its productive capacity, with the sole intention of creating decent work to meet the needs of the vast majority who are victims of the triple crisis of unemployment, poverty, and inequality. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to argue very strongly that it doesn't matter what commitments we have made where. The triple crisis of unemployment, poverty, and inequality is our reality in this country today. And the U.S. has made the same commitment in those multilateral and bilateral forums, in Davos, in WTO. But when there was a crisis around currency wars, they didn't call any meeting of the WTO to say that they would print money. They just went ahead in the interest of their own people. They went ahead, they made sure that they print money. You can define them the way you want to define them. And one to argue on this matter that this committee has got a huge responsibility in its task, not to be blamed, but to remain very resolute in the interest of the commitment that the president of the country have led all of us. The decision by the competition tribunal to allow this deal is biased to the imperialist interest driven by Walmart and is totally at odds with the national agenda that seeks to grow and build our economy, grow our productive capacity and create decent jobs in the interest of responding to our immediate social needs. The above experience illustrated deeper crisis imposed in our country by market-driven nature and content of competition acts and other pieces of legislation, where we have witnessed a takeover of strategic industries, assets in the economy, whilst we have been told by many that South African government must not intervene in the economy. But we know that today Standard Bank is 20% owned by Chinese Standard Bank, and APSA is 20% owned by the British. To those who claim that the prohibition of the proposed measure would affect investor confidence in South Africa and discourage foreign direct investment, NUMSA has always distinguished between genuine foreign direct investment and imperialist takeover. I think we want to say that where we organize as a union, we have got huge, many multinationals who have invested in this country. They were not here in order to loot. They were not here in order to destroy. the very jobs that this country desperately needs. This thing cannot be supported because of its nature and character, as stated above, but also because of Walmart's global notorious disrespect for workers' rights, the firm-specific business model, and practices that will have a disastrous impact on the South African economy. We want to submit that in our country, the retail sector is important in its own right, but cannot be seen in isolation from its supply chain and manufacturing, food, agriculture.
Madam Chair, can I just, on a point of order?
Right.
Your ruling seems to be totally ignored here.
What are the rules?
Because it is clearly infringing on what is in the documents before the import at the moment. I would ask for your ruling to be upheld. Thank you. I think there's quite a number of things that have been said here that is simply infringing on the documents in front of the appeal court at the moment. Various things about Walmart that you have clearly said that we must steer away from, or that might impact or implicate that. And there's quite a number of things that have been said now. And obviously, if I read forward, it seems like there's even more reference to that. So just your ruling on this, please.
Okay, I thought I heard the presenter talking about general position that they were against. Come again? And that was mentioned also. The reason why I allowed even the Walmart to mention the opposition by, I thought this was general. If you feel it's not general, then that's something else to concern. I thought this is general, because if you listen to the next paragraph, it is also relating to other measures that happened.
Madam Chair, there was already words like this deal, the Walmart deal. So there's a lot of things that have already referred to this Walmart Massmart merger deal. So that is not specific.
That's why I needed you to be specific, Tamara. Thank you very much. Mr. Jim? I will request that you refrain from anything that would have an impact on the case before them.
Literature, NUMSA is not in any court process.
Yes, it's true. But we are saying, can you listen to us? Our condition is that, or the rule is that, we refrain from talking to anything that is related to the conditions as put, or the appeal as it is, and the difficulties that the appeal, as the notice of the appeal as it stands, is very general.
Can I continue with you?
I want your commitment to that. Yes, I'll give you an opportunity to continue. Do I have a commitment that you're not going to talk to anything related to it?
Maybe I should go, because I'm here for this deal, and I've not had anything that has been said in relation on what I'm raising that is going to do with papers that are in court.
Okay. Babengo Nyama?
I must say, you know, I find it a bit confusing in my mind. When I read the rules, the committee has requested that all present avoid referring to these issues and so on, rather focus on the impact of these measures. And I thought that what we're listening to is the impact. So in my view, I need to be more educated, because I'm listening to the impact and the motivation of the and the motivation of the investment on the impact, and the impact it's having on employment and better salary of the economy.
Thanks, Mr. Ngonyama. Ma'am, so
Chair, if we can take the
willing to do a good measure. That's what my mother said. They were talking about the measure.
Other members? Member Mabasa, Member Julie?
No, I think what we should do is to say Mr. Jim should speak more generally. And it is difficult, but I think that the committee does need this input. I will say that where there has been a strain, it will only be very minimal if I look at the whole presentation. So in a way, I will motivate for continuing, but correctly that the presenter must be aware that the wordings that could be used, that would be used in court, should not be used. You know, it is a difficult one. Thanks.
Thanks, Chairperson. Afterwards.
Thanks, Chairperson. I find it strange that this was started.
I'm very eager, Chairperson. I think we should continue. Now that we have a legal team and the staff that is advising as we go on, but it doesn't stop a member from helping the Chairperson. That I think here we have overstepped the mark. But I not a legal person, but I do have a legal ear. So I think we are still on that line. And if there's any transgression, it's not that major.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Manamela.
Thanks, Chair. I think we should allow NUMSA to go ahead because the specific paragraph referred to does not in any way have an impact on, I think, the conditions referred to in paragraph 3. And more so that NUMSA has already indicated that they are not party to the court proceedings. And I think the third point, which is, I think, a very important point, is about reference to members being prohibited to, in terms of Rule 67. And NUMSA or the presenter is not a member of parliament. So I suggest that we allow NUMSA to go ahead with their presentation and we interact with that presentation at the end. Thanks.
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you, Dr. Manamela. Can we then agree that I will continue the work that I was assigned to do and allow the presenter to continue, but also want the presenter that please refrain from any
then say I'm warned, I'll try very carefully.
Please help me so that I can help you to give us the message you send it to us. Thank you.
The creation of enormous and unmatched countervailing power or buyer power as a result of entry of the world's largest retailer into the African retail sector will impact not only on mass competitors in retail space, which include SMEs and informal traders, but also reverberate up the supply chain. This would have several harmful effects on both the retail sector and its suppliers. Economists have studied this phenomenon and describe, among others, the waterbed effect, the spiral effect, and the creation of monopsony, single customer market in which there is only one buyer that follows the arrival of Walmart business practice and business model in given market or sector. It is our submission that there are two areas of concern in relation to employment issues. The first is the effect of employment within wholesale retail sector itself, and the second on the local industries and businesses that supply the sector. Since the Competition Tribunal's decision, Pick n Pay has announced the retrenchment of more than 3,000 workers. It is pushing the bounds of credibility to believe that these job losses have nothing to do with the arrival of Walmart. And maybe the point we made there, Chair, is that from where we're sitting, we think that any company that has been supplying in this country, if it is to continue to survive, what it would have to do would be to drastically reduce cost. And the way we know how companies reduce cost is to basically to retrench labor so that the unit of producing is done on a very reduced cost. And this is going to huge potential in terms of job losses in the country. We believe that in order to compete with Walmart, other large retailers such as Pick n Pay and Shoprite Checkers will be forced to cut costs, and they will attempt to do this by reducing labor costs. The effect on employment in smaller retail outlets may be far greater. Walmart has already indicated that it intends to embark on an aggressive expansion program and advertising campaign. This we contend will lead to closure of many small retailers, particularly in rural areas. Many of these small outlets are owned by historically disadvantaged people. It will also bring job losses, which will not necessarily be replaced by Walmart jobs. The committee's attention is drawn to a study by University of Bonn on the effect of Walmart on local labor markets. The research was done in the United States. The research found that every store that opened destroyed 3 local jobs for every 2 created. Further, retail employment was reduced by an average of 2.7% in every state where Walmart set up business. The effect of Walmart on local labor market, this Institute for Study for Labor, and I think people can revisit that. In another study carried out in the United States, the Economic Policy Institute showed that Walmart trade existed with China alone eliminated 196,000 jobs in the U.S. between 2001 and 2006. According to research, 133,000 of the jobs were manufacturing jobs. The Walmart effect, its Chinese imports have displaced nearly 200,000 jobs in the U.S. Using the University of Bonn study, the South African Clothing and Textile Workers Union has worked out that if Walmart opens 150 new food, maybe we could leave it, because I'm not sure whether that motivation is part of the court process.
Can I just guide you?
Fine.
In terms of your presentation, the paragraph 4, that 4 from above, paragraph 3 from the bottom. On page 4, paragraph 3, page 2, page, paragraph 2, paragraph 3, I've got it on page 3.
Can I make it easier in the chair and there? Because I'm a bit worried. I represent workers, and if it means I must present their mandate, I must actually present their mandate.
Okay.
And I think if this committee is not ready to hear
were willing to accept that this community is not ready.
I don't know if
we
were willing to hear you, but if you were here when you read the statement on how you should proceed, you'd understand where we need to move in from.
Look, the only suggestion I can make is...
Can I continue? We read the statement precisely so that we can be able to guide you, and this has been happening ever since you started the session. We clearly understand that you're representing workers. It was even worse with COSATU. I think we couldn't allow them to present most of their presentation. And I guess if you were listening to what I said when I started the meeting in the morning, you would understand the basis from which I'm moving from. So the reason why I'm trying to guide that when you come to those issues, make sure that to those areas that I'm identifying, make sure that you don't put them as you put them here, because they are actually responding to some of the issues that we said you should not entertain. That's the reason why I'm saying that. And I will repeat again, this is not because we do not want to hear you. This is mainly to respond to the rule that we imposed on ourselves as Parliament that indicates that actually respects the separation of power between ourselves and the judiciary. And since the competition appeal court is within the, we're taking it just within the mainstream of the judiciary of the country, and wouldn't want to jeopardize that. This is the request we made. And this is, we will appeal to you again. We're not saying students give us this presentation. We are just saying that in whatever you're saying, please refrain from that. It's not because you are not party to the appellant. We know that there are people, this is at the moment a call that has given notice. And that on its own, it does limit us actually from doing what we need.
So can I propose that in trying to navigate,
mm-hmm.
and I must say that I'm very disappointed, but it's not for debate. My suggestion would be that rather than to give you our motivation, which is our motivation, it will be our motivation today, it will be our motivation moving forward. And because you're saying that our motivation is impacting on the court processes, I would suggest that what I do is to submit the recommendation we want to make to the committee without any motivation, and we leave it at that.
Can we hear, Member? Honorable Member?
Thanks, Chair. I think we've got to make a determination on the base of the following. The first thing is, do we want to create an impression out there that we called people to come and make submissions, organizations, and all of that? And on the basis of that, and on the basis of the legal recommendations that we have received, we create an impression that we began to somewhat consciously black out certain sections of their submission. So that's the first thing. The second thing is for us to weigh the implications of an organization or individuals who have been invited to this portfolio committee who are making submissions, the weight, attach that weight to whatever court processes or institutions that are arbitrating on this matter, and whether if we allow this submission go on as it has been prepared and as we have seen it, because whether NUMSA goes straight to the recommendations or not, the fact of the matter is that we have the submission here before us, and all of that. So
So I think we've got to make that determination. And on the basis of that, you know, I would personally see no reason why we would proceed not only with this submission, but also with any other submission that should come before us, you know, given all of these conditions and our enforcement of these conditions. I may be suffering from the same condition as Comrade Jim there, you know, but I've got the rules here, I understand what they mean, I understand their implications, and up to so far, I've not seen any contraventions of this particular rules on the part of Musa submission.
Thanks, Mr. Mandela. I will address what you're saying after other listening to other members. Members of the
Citizens? Yeah, I would like to persuade to continue in accordance with the recent before the house here. Maybe we should leave to him as to do with others, but now we have engaged many presenters and informed him to did not want to discriminate against him to say he must not present him. And also, if we do that, it was in text those who presented before him. But we really want to hear the whole, you know, input from Musa. We are here as public representatives, and workers in general are part of, I mean, the entire public of South Africa that we are here to represent and try to make that better for all of us. If maybe we can read. And maybe to give them time with that from the department just to identify areas that may not be conducive for this meeting, but maybe to be dealt with in a later stage. But I don't think there's any area here that might not be assisting the process going forward.
Thanks, ma'am. Member Ntuli?
Yeah, thanks, Chairperson. I think Honorable Manamela is at this advantage because as the committee, we try to map up how are we going to conduct this year. And unfortunately, Mr. Chimua was not there when we started trying to agree on how are we going to continue. So, but in short, Chairperson, I would say, as the chair, you have to rule, or you agree with Mr. Chin, or you continue with it.
I'm deliberately allowing members to really air their views on this, so that I can ultimately make a ruling. I'll give to Mr. Murray and then Mr. Chabidin.
Madam Chair, I think we might do too much of this. I think yesterday morning we went through a process. We deliberated this as a committee. We got the advice from legal advisors. We went through that. You, together with the legal advice, draw up a statement. You present it here. You read it out. Everybody had to comply with that. And that's why, for the member that only joined us today, that is why it went so good so far, and not purely because of other reasons. So I think everybody has just complied to that, and I think you've dealt with it very efficiently so far. But the moment that we are going back and now questioning what we've done yesterday, what we've deliberated yesterday, and the ruling that was set yesterday, I mean, then we're opening up everything, and I think that is improper, and I think you are the chair. And in terms of that ruling that you've made yesterday, that is a ruling that must apply to everybody. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr.
Chabazin? Madam President, I think we're all in order. Everything is going well. We've put restrictions on what on things that, you know, we operate within certain rules. And everywhere there are rules. So, these are our rules, these are our limitations that are caused by, you know, the our relationship with the judiciary and respecting each other's space. But the got our presentation. You can ask questions on issues that you think are relevant to your restrictions. We can still engage with that. I really don't see this problem is not insurmountable. I mean, this is not it's not a crisis. Chairperson, whatever. I think we are still in order, all of us.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm happy that some of the issues were addressed by members themselves. We agreed on a procedure, and I think we must be doing well so far. And, well, if NUMSA, because I wanted to assist, if you feel that this process is really restricting, too much restricting, and your recommendation that you will deal with recommendations only, I think we must give you that opportunity to do so. If you feel that the motivation is going to lead you to really dealing with the issues related to the merits of the case, I will then give you an opportunity to continue with the recommendations to the committee.
Yeah. Well, let's have made the issues we've raised. We're making recommendations. NUMSA wishes to make the following submission as a necessary intervention required to deal with the matter-oriented measure of Walmart and Massmart. In the interest of the vast majority of our people who are victims of triple crisis of unemployment, deepening poverty and worsening inequality, a high-powered presidential commission of inquiry must be established with immediate effect to investigate, one, the severity of the impact of this deal on the South African economy, the severity of the impact of this deal on employment, local business, and local competitive environment. Any effect on the current levels of employment and promotion of precarious and atypical work. An effect the deal may have on particular industries or sectors of the economy, and above all, its impact on the structure of the economy. Any effect on the ability of small business or firms owned or controlled by historical disadvantaged persons to become competitive and stay in business. The discrepancy between government economic growth trust, which seeks to increase industrial capacity and deindustrialization, that will take place due to the importation of durable consumer goods by Walmart and the expansion of local manufacturing industry. The feasibility of developing monitoring systems which enforce Walmart's consistent compliance to the condition imposed by Competition Tribunal, thereby ensuring that our industrial policy program is not destroyed and undermined by Walmart deal. The Commission will have to determine whether the measure in its current form would not detrimentally impact on the following fundamental imperatives: stimulating local procurement and local content, guaranteeing trade union and worker rights in the operations of Walmart, compliance with South Africa's economic policies in trade, industrial, and competition policies. NUMSA is convinced that the proposed high-powered presidential commission and its investigation will give us negative outcomes, and we therefore demand that its findings must be the basis that empowers our government to take a political, economical decision in the interest of the country's agenda for development to reverse this deal. In conclusion, it is our submission that the decision in terms of Competition Act cannot be made in isolation from economic imperatives of South Africa. To return to where this submission began, the government has committed itself to a job creation, decent work agenda, and any decision made by tribunals such as Competition Tribunal, which will have an effect on the economy, must be made with the aim of achieving this end. We submit that in this case, an opportunity was lost to state clearly the public interest issues and competition matters. Matters are important, and the short-term low prices gain cannot be more important than the preservation of jobs and manufacturing industry within South African economy. Nothing in this submission should lead you to believe that NUMSA thinks that the retail sector is currently perfect. We believe that there are huge problems, to mention only one of casualization of labor. We do not believe, however, that allowing Walmart into South Africa is a solution to any such problem and could indeed make them worse. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim. We will now give, I will now give an opportunity to members to ask questions, especially related to recommendations we've made. Van Royen, the Mabasa, Mezo Desi. Yeah, in that order, please. That's Van Royen.
Thank you very much. Let me start by welcoming the presentation from NUMSA. Chair, focusing on the first recommendation. In Jalia, the commission tribunal is established to assess the impact of any business transaction on our economy. And obviously, as a consequence of that process, present its findings. And as we are all aware, that is exactly what they have done in this regard. Now, the recommendation by NUMSA suggesting that the presidency must then establish a commission. It might take, it might be construed as undermining the object of this treatment. Now, what are the compelling reasons to justify such a move if we have an institution like the Competition Tribunal to focus on this specific objective? Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Van Roy. Babu Mabasa.
Thanks, colleague chair. I will ask in the general area arena to the first question is in the experience of NUMSA, what has been the difference between what has been the difference to workers between a monopoly player throughout the country and a number of players where there is a minimal collusion because they are many. That's the one part. And then the second question is, what does South Africa need to ensure that workers behind whom are huge families and the right salaries so that they can take care of the huge families that lie or that ride on their back because of the huge unemployment. And then the third one will be am I right if I say a big monopolistic player is likely to have adverse effects on small businesses in the townships as well as the informal settlements and also in businesses in rural areas? And the last one is, is my observation correct that casualization of labor does a country more harm because that type of labor has got no good bargaining right because they may not even be allowed to join trade unions? And they don't have unemployment benefits, and they can be dismissed any time as they try to fight for their rights. Thanks, colleague.
we can hear from the Jim that what is it can do, you know, to get what is the truth out of the whole thing. And like I say, the president after president, that I'm saying the same thing in terms of the social economic conditions that will be expected upon should the matter take place. What is that should be done for us to dig out the truth? But moving forward, we really, face the public in place as to what we are saying, because now we don't know what it is anymore.
Thank you, Madam President. Establish a commission, presidential commission.
But maybe it's important that your woman just presents that already, but I would like to move to ask the same question to them, that what is that should be done for us to dig our way.
And mental health, in that nature.
Thanks, Chairperson. In their presentation, they've shown they've shown that the they are committed to continued use of casual labor. They call it something. What is that? They are flexi workers or doing flexi hours. As a union, what do you think the impact if we are to continue this way, what will be the effect of this on job security in this industry? One. Secondly, most people who work in the retail industry are young people, and majority of them are women. So, and knowing how this and most people who work in this industry are people from, majority of them, I could safely say more than 70 or close to 80% are people from previously disadvantaged communities. And that when one woman is employed in any industry, they take responsibility for more families. Not only individuals, but more families. So what do you think would be the impact if we are to continue using this on poverty, on job creation, job security, and its impact on young people and women? Thank you. If there is to be any negative effect, then if not, in some cases
It was not even compulsory, it was voluntary from their side, where they've made commitments in this regard that you are questioning.
Mm-hmm.
So, everything like that has been in there. What is of a concern to me is what you have mentioned here, is, and I read it, G1G, the feasibility of developing a monitoring system that will enforce Walmart's consistent compliance. Now, we have got a competition commission, we have got a competition tribunal, so we have got competition authorities. And there's the recourses that can be followed. And you're asking for a presidential commission, despite the work that the Competition Commission Tribunal has done, and I think what the committee feels that in many, many cases they've done an excellent job. So, what are you actually trying to say to us? Because these things are being dealt with there. Don't you have trust in the legislature powers and the powers that the authorities, the competition authorities have what has been given by them by the legislation? Or what is the real concern that you've got? It seems like there is maybe another agenda behind this, because all of these has been dealt with, but you're still persistent that this is not there. So maybe you can shed light on that. Thank you very much.
Mr. Mara, I think we must refrain also from insinuating, because if you say there's an agenda behind, you're asking a question, but you're also responding to yourself. Can't you wait for him to give you that? Because if you say it seems like there's an agenda, whereas you're asking him a question, it looks like you are insinuating that he's not, you know, presenting this in good faith. I think he must not even respond to that. Okay, is there any other question? No. Can I then give to Mr. Jim to respond?
Thank you, Chair. I think the first thing that we would want to say,
I take it you are used to having chairs of state and the mayor. Thank you. Unless I'm that tired. Okay.
I think the first thing that we the view we're taking is that there is a crisis in the country. That crisis is a crisis of unemployment, it's a crisis of poverty, it's a crisis of inequality. The gap between the rich and the poor in this country continues to widen. And we have lost 117 million jobs as a result of the global crisis of capitalism. And therefore, this is happening against the backdrop of a seriously deindustrializing country. Just yesterday, one employer from the Eastern Cape was sending us a long list, which can be shared with all of you, of companies that have closed just in the past 2 to 3 years, which means that on a very big scale, the extent which this country has liberalized, the extent which this country has actually embarked on some of the commitments that we were, there was an earlier presentation here, which reminded us of the commitment we made in those particular good forums. We made commitments then, serious commitments that we shall not do this, this is what we'll do, we'll liberalize trade, we'll remove the change control, we've allowed money we need to be invested in productive sectors of the economy to create employment. In this country, finance capital, which is central to minerals energy complex, which we have not yet transformed, continues to be dominant. And I think from where we're sitting, we have to ask ourselves a couple of difficult questions. First, we've witnessed that the Competition Commission, one of the things that it is, which it can't do anything, it operates within a particular act.
Their role is to check whether indeed is a particular transaction meeting the law and everything else. And if our own government in the recent past made commitment of 5 million jobs to be created, and we're sitting now, as we're sitting here, where a particular hoover, in the form of Walmart, which have destroyed jobs globally, which has been very brutal in being aggressive. They drop prices to nothing in order to undercut the rest of the economy, to take them out of the market. It doesn't matter what they will promise in the tribunal about how they will reserve. I mean, I've listened here to such a hogwash, sending everybody, including the government, to sleep on fundamental questions that were evaded. They were not answered. And indeed, in companies of this nature, the devil is on the duty. We're not here that you don't have men and women in the competition commission, in the tribunal, who are doing their best in terms of exercising their task. But we're saying, in the interest of the country, in fact, if you're talking about us, we will lose the white food sector, we will lose the electronic industry, and that's deindustrialization of the country. The one sector that is remaining is DeFi. It will be closed once this deal takes off on the ground. And I'm not sure, I mean, casualization is the order of the day in this company. Let the consultants should have invited members of the committee to hear about their experiences of how Walmart all over the world have behaved. Basically, I'm calling them a hoover. They are going to come. What we will experience is complete shaving of jobs. NUMSA had an option. That option should be to say that it's water under the ground, the deal is a done deal, and therefore there's no point of crying over the splitted milk. But I think if we're not careful as members, as political parties that forms the committee and everybody else, this country, the level of deindustrialization that is taking place, within no time, I think we're sitting over a bomb. Something has to be done very quick to create employment, to industrialize this country. And we think that we need a new growth path that deals with the ownership patterns in the economy, that deals with driving manufacturing, and a very simple thing. I mean, we've got minerals which China and everybody are looking for, but it has been difficult to impose one simple thing, an export tax, on them such that if they want to buy, they buy those minerals, but they beneficiate, they do everything here. And we think in the face of such a crisis, to approve a deal of this nature is a setback for the country. And it might not bite us now, because we think that to appear good globally, that we're integrating ourselves in the economy, might look good, but I don't expect. So I'm responding broad. The question about the commission is the extent which NUMSA view how serious is this matter. We think that if good work has been done by the tribunal, by the competition commission, this empowered commission is suggesting, it will look at all that. It will do it objectively. And we're raising it, but we're almost convinced as we raise it that the outcome are not going to be positive outcome in support of this particular deal. And I think that's the point we're making. I'm not going to go back to the question posed about the areas we think they must focus on. Because when I was unpacking those areas, I was told that it's a sub judice matter. I don't intend to violate share the framework that we have created for us in dealing with this question. Yes, there is a big crisis in the country of labor brokers, of casualization, captains of industries continues to maximize profit for themselves. The rate of profit, even during the recession, has been going up, but the rate of exploitation has been escalating in the country. And once you have people who don't have any buying power because they continue to be made redundant, you cannot be thinking about economic growth, you can't be thinking about development. So I'm responding very broad to the question from the member.
Thank you very much. I'm also noting that as much as you're making the recommendation on the High Powered Commission, you also have conclusive remarks around the work that they're going to be doing.
And I'll give an example. One day there were workers, this factory was closing, and workers were asking a question: what must we do? Must we fold arms and do nothing? Or must we do something about the fact that this factory is going to close? So that when our children ask us later on, when the factory was closing, what did you do? We should be able to give a particular explanation. From where we're sitting, we think that a disaster is about to kick in as a result of this deal. And unfortunately, if you lost 500 jobs, it's globally proven, you will never replace those particular jobs. And in this country, with levels of poverty and inequality, we don't think that we are at a point where we could be playing experiments about the lives of our people.
All right. I guess the committee has really heard you, but I wanted also to caution not what you have said about other presenters. I think we must respect the fact that they came here also trying to give input that would have, in their own thinking, would think that they are going to help the committee doing their work. So I would also, I'm saying this because I want to protect whoever has made the presentation here, including yourself, so that there's nobody who is going to really abuse them. So I want to take this opportunity to thank you. As leaders in Parliament, we are trying our best to come in. The reason why we created this platform, it's because we realize that people are eager to talk, and we then decided to give this platform. And I don't think it's a waste of time. I think it's in good spirit, and it has good intention. And as representatives, we are going to continue to do our work, and one of our works is to ensure that we represent people from all walks of life. And as this portfolio committee, I know that the five priorities of the country are high on our agenda, and we are going to ensure that we achieve that. Thank you very much, Mr. Jim, for your presentation. Everything is noted that was said by the committee. Can we now take an opportunity to listen to Saptu from Mr. Flock? Colleagues, we are not going to break for tea. There is tea and coffee outside. Those who feel like having a cup of coffee or tea, please do so quietly, because we are pressed with time, really. Can we allow you to go and grab a cup of coffee or tea, and we have we continue with our hearing. Can we allow Mr. Flock? Can I have order from members, please? Members? Not school children, please. I'm not a principal or a teacher. Okay, Mr. Flock, over to you. Thank you. Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you for the opportunity. Good afternoon to the honourable members of the committee and to everybody else. As the honourable Chairperson said, my name is Etienne Flock. I work for the South African Clothing and Textile Workers Union, and this is our submission to the Portfolio Committee on the Walmart and Massmart merger, with a very strong focus on the impact of the merger as per the parameters that you've set. So firstly, you know, as I said, we are concerned about the impact of the merger in two main areas. The first area is in employment, and employment in those suppliers of Massmart, specifically the suppliers who supply stores like Game and Macro, DRYN, etc. But also the suppliers and other retailers, and I'll get a little bit to that later on. We're also concerned about employment in other retailers. The second major area of concern with this merger and the impact of the merger is around industrial capacity in the manufacturing sector. And Chairperson, I'll also get to that a little bit later and discuss that in some detail. So why is the Clothing and Textile Workers Union here today? Our members are employed in clothing, textile, and footwear factories that supply Massmart. And although we are here and we are concerned about that, I must say the situation that I will be describing here, as I think members have heard from FAU and also from NUMSA, is not specific to the clothing, textile, and footwear industry. Now, we think that the impact of the merger will be seen across the manufacturing sector. While there's been a very broad discussion about the impact of the merger, ours is quite a narrow focus on the issues of procurement and the impact of the merger on procurement. You know, perhaps it'd be useful, Chairperson, you know, there's the saying that everybody has their Chinese statistics. So, you know, everybody can quote the statistic from China, and I think you may have seen in this process that everybody has their Walmart statistic. So I will start with my Walmart statistic, and it may be useful just to have a look at this slide and to remind us about this merger. You know, I think the member Manamela said, you know, why is their special focus on this merger and not so much on other foreign direct investment? And I think that's seen in the first blue column on the graph there. The company that's investing is Walmart, had sales of about 2.8 trillion rand in 2010. It's the biggest company in the world by sales. It's bigger than BP, it's bigger than Exxon, it's bigger than all those petrol companies even. But then what we've also done, Chairperson, is we've added the sales of the other major retailers. The second largest retailer in the world is a French retailer called Carrefour. You can just see the gap between Carrefour and Walmart. Let's move over to the left side, and you may not see those little slivers there, but those slivers are the South African retailers. Our biggest retailer is ShopRite, and they are only, Chairperson, 2.4% of the size of Walmart. Massmart itself, I think, about 1.7% of the size of Walmart. So, why are we concerned about procurement of Walmart? We've got a couple of quotes that I'd like to read to you, and Chairperson Ntuli, you'll find that these are not quotes from far left-wing organizations. These are quotes from international analysts who analyze this company, who try and inform shareholders and possible share buyers. It's even the kind of things that you find the Honourable Mare may sometimes read also. So if I can give you a quote, Walmart's size and global scale of operations are key competitive advantages compared to rivals with more modest sales and profits. This gives the group stronger bargaining power. And that comes from Euromonitor. Another analyst company, Morningstar, says Walmart's unmatched scale leads to favourable terms on everything from the product on its shelf to store leases and distribution agreements. And then a quote from the Los Angeles Times says, from its headquarters in Bentonville, Arkansas, the company constantly pressures suppliers to lower their prices. At the same time, Walmart buyers continually search the globe for still cheaper sources of supply. The competition pits vendor against vendor, country against country. So, We wanted to share with the committee what has happened in Mexico, where Walmart also has a presence. And we asked the question, is this a blueprint for what will happen in South Africa? So we think Mexico, for several reasons, a useful comparison of what may happen here. And a very good reason why it's useful is because Kantar Retail, which is the consultancy that works with Walmart, sees it as a useful roadmap. And it says, Kantar says, the growth story of Massmart is only just starting. With Walmart's backing, Massmart can replicate Mexico's rate of growth in South Africa. So we're using this example of Mexico. Let's look at what has happened in Mexico. Walmart entered some time ago in 1991, and it's grown to almost 1,800 stores. In the last 6 months alone, it has grown by 320 stores. The important thing is the second biggest retailer in Mexico is a company called Soriana. They only have 500 stores, so they're less than a third of the size of Walmart in that country. Chairperson, we've given you a quick slide there to show the massive growth over the last 2 years of Walmart in Mexico. So, we've seen the establishment of Walmart in Mexico, we've seen the growth and the dominance of Walmart in Mexico. What has been the effect on competition? As a result of Walmart's growth and dominance, there's been a consolidation in the Mexican retail sector, and thus the consumer benefits that often come with the entry of a player like Walmart has been lessened. There's also been a widespread process of expansion and consolidation of the retailers, and an increasingly oligopolistic market structure in which four firms control more than 80% of sales. This may counteract some of the benefits for Mexican households, such as lower consumer costs. Honorable Mabaza has been referring to monopolies. In Mexico, there's this oligopoly, which is four firms, which just dominate the sector. This dominance of Walmart has been so strong in Mexico that the Mexican Federal Competition Commission has approved the setting up of a buying cooperative by Walmart's largest competitors. Now, why should this be of interest to us? It basically means that there's a acknowledgement by the Competition Commission in Mexico that Walmart has grown so strong that its competitors can't compete anymore. And the only way it can compete is if they band together and start buying together. Now, that, of course, is anti-competitive, but they had to introduce this anti-competitive measure in order to deal with Walmart's dominance in that market. We ask, is this a blueprint for South Africa? Is this where we're going to go? Now, what has happened to procurement in Mexico? The sourcing practices within the Mexican retail industry has been affected by Walmart. A French economist called Cedric Derrab did an extensive study and published an article in the Cambridge Journal of Economics where he discusses what has happened to procurement in Mexico. He says there's been a dramatic increase in imports by Walmart and competitor retailers. And if I can quote Chairperson, after 1997, we observe a faster increase in Walmart's imports in real terms compared with its competitors. If we look at the imports purchases ratio, we see that all the enterprises have been significantly increasing the share of imports in their purchases, but also that Walmart has shown a much more dramatic evolution from 20% in 1997 to more than 55% in 2002 and 2003. Once again, we ask, is this a blueprint for South Africa? What has been the effect on Mexican suppliers? Where Walmart does source locally in Mexico, there's tremendous pressure on suppliers and there's even been job losses. So Walmart has had a devastating impact on Mexican manufacturing. Although Walmart initially claimed that it would incorporate local Mexican firms into its supply chain, the famous squeeze on profits and labor never let up. And then here's a quote from a small clothing manufacturer. The manufacturer said, Walmart has driven many suppliers out of business. Walmart maintains its profit margins. They never reduce their margin. They do pass on savings in price, but at the expense of the manufacturer. You can increase efficiency a certain amount. But, for example, let me tell you, we're going to sell shirts at a discount of 40%. You, the manufacturer, have to cut your price 40%. So the consumer benefits, but they're driving up business, the manufacturers that provide jobs. In the soaps, detergents, and surfactants industry, we've seen quite an interesting thing. The suppliers of Walmart in that country that provide those products to Walmart have seen a cumulative improvement in value add per worker. In other words, there's been some increases in productivity, etc. But there's employment decrease by 20%. So even where there's purchases of local products, we see a decrease in employment because of pressure on suppliers. Once again, Chair, we ask, is this a blueprint for South Africa? Now, you may say, you know, you've chosen Mexico, but what about other countries? It's not the only example of job losses and pressure on suppliers. There are countless examples and case studies in the United States. Comrade Jim had set it out a little bit about what has happened there in terms of jobs. He mentioned the fact that the Economic Policy Institute found that a large amount of jobs had been lost because of Walmart's imports, 200,000 in total, which about 130,000 of those were in manufacturing. Importantly, the job losses in manufacturing were not offset by the creation of jobs in the retail sector. There are many other examples. Companies called Ferris Fashions and Stitches in the clothing sector, Carolina Mold in the textile sector, something called Lakewood Engineering Manufacturing that makes fans. But there are also examples in countries like Honduras, in Guatemala, and there's even a quote in the Los Angeles Times by the Commerce Minister of Bangladesh, which talks about the relentless pressure of Walmart on the suppliers in Bangladesh. So, what is the effect on South Africa? We are concerned that the impact of the merger will be seen in a few areas. There'll be decreased demand for locally produced products because of imports, and in two areas. Firstly, because we think that Walmart has the power, scale, and the links with China and other low-cost countries to be importing itself. But importantly, there's something called the Walmart effect. And that happens across the world, and it's basically where other retailers start to mimic what Walmart is doing. So they see Walmart is importing a lot, so they start to import themselves. So we think that other importers, in order to follow what Walmart is doing, will also start importing. When companies do procure locally, whether retailers will procure locally, we feel that there's a never-ending squeeze on suppliers. And I gave you some of those examples and the quotes on the suppliers from Mexico. Why are we concerned about the squeeze on suppliers? It means that the profit margin in the manufacturers and the factories are very low. It means they'll never ever be able to move into higher value added products because they don't have that additional money to do research and development and produce innovative products. And it may even happen that they are forced to import themselves. So what do we think will be the overall impact of the merger in South Africa? Retrenchment, factory closures, and deindustrialization. But also importantly for competition, foreclosure of domestic manufacturers. So you may even have less competition in the domestic manufacturing sector because of this. We also think there will be further impact in the merger in the retail sector, where you will see increased consolidation and concentration in retail due to Walmart's growth, but also due to others trying to compete with Walmart, and increased barriers to entry in the retail market. That, of course, will lead to less competition, which will negate some of the positive impact that may come as a result of the merger. So why are we so concerned with the manufacturing sector? You've heard FAO, you've heard NUMSA, you've heard SAC to come and speak today about the manufacturing sector. We do not organize workers in the merger parties, and yet we are here very concerned. And if I can go into a little bit of detail about why the manufacturing industry may be at risk due to the impact of the merger. We think there will be a wide-ranging impact on manufacturing sector if foreign goods can be sourced cheaper. And this includes things like light manufacturing, clothing, shoes, plastic goods, appliances, etc., processed and even fresh food, but also those goods that are perceived to be difficult to import, like building materials. Why are we so concerned about the manufacturing sector? The New Growth Path and IPAC recognizes the importance of manufacturing to create decent jobs and to deal with poverty. We are concerned that mergers such as this, but also possibly this merger, could have a significant impact on the manufacturing sector and undo what the NGP and the IPAC tries to do. We also look at the examples of other countries which have successfully developed and industrialized. And they did so on the back of their manufacturing sector. So the importance of the manufacturing sector in leading growth and development in a country is crucial. For that reason, we are concerned about the impact. Chair, if I could just quickly talk to you about, you know, some of the clothing, textile and footwear manufacturers that are involved or that supply Massmart. While clothing, textiles, footwear and leather is not a large part of Massmart sales, it has a disproportionately large employment effect. So while there are many, many more suppliers, we, through our own information, managed to find 14 suppliers. Just wanted to tell you a little bit about them. So we move away from this theory into real factories. These suppliers are situated in cities and industrial towns in former Bantustan, such as Kwakwa, Bophuthatswana, Ciskei, Transkei, etc. They make a range of goods, including socks, sports shorts, bedding, duvets, towels, underwear, workwear, carpets, blankets, and shoes. In some companies, as much as 60% of their total production goes to Massmart. So they're very reliant about what is happening at Massmart and the decisions that are taken there to import or to source locally. These companies together employ about 8,000 workers with almost 40,000 dependents. So these are not insignificant numbers. As I say, it's not all the suppliers, but it's the ones that we've been able to find thus far. Now, Chair, you know, you may ask, well, why is clothing, textiles, footwear so important? Why is it important that we are concerned about the impact of the merger on this sector? The sector is the most labor-absorbing sector in manufacturing, so it's the ideal tool, the ideal sector to fight poverty and unemployment. Job losses in clothing and textiles has a disproportionate impact on women and the livelihoods of women workers. And the reason that is because in the entire sector, two-thirds of the sector are women. In clothing, 4 out of 5, about 80% of the workers are women. So as soon as you lose a clothing factory, and even if it's replaced by another factory, you're going to have an impact on gender equity, because there's a very good chance in another factory or products that are imported that women will not be as empowered. We also think that there'll be, if there are job losses in clothing and textiles, that there'll be a negative impact on the areas where the clothing, textiles, footwear and leather industry is based. As I said, it's contrary to many other sectors. It's not mainly located in Gauteng. It's mainly located in the coastal provinces, including KwaZulu-Natal, the Eastern Cape, Western Cape, but also in the non-metro towns throughout South Africa, and as I said, in the former Bantustan. So, Chairperson, what do we think the impact of this merger will be on competition? We think that except for the impact on suppliers and manufacturing, and also on South African retail, there will also be an impact on South African retailing. There will be a further consolidation and concentration through increased mergers and acquisitions and rapid organic growth. This will entrench Massmart's power in certain sectors and build it in others, including those where it's the leading sector at the moment. Even in sectors where Massmart is not the leader or is not dominant, we think that the massive resources that Walmart has will allow it to grow significantly and develop and have huge advantages over its rivals. And here we'd like to quote from what has happened in Brazil, a Morningstar report on Brazil. It says in 2010, Walmart invested 1 billion rand for new stores and infrastructure upgrades in Brazil. With its unmatched resources, Walmart is outspending Carrefour, which is the biggest retailer in Brazil, while committing less than 10% of its overall budget, while Carrefour is spending approximately one-fifth of its budget on its Latin American operations. Meanwhile, even though Carrefour is currently the leading retailer with respect to sales volumes, its overall margins lag 4% its competitors, and has access to vastly fewer resources. In our view, this raises questions over how long Carrefour will be able to maintain its top position. So what this is recognizing is that even if a retailer is not dominant, because of the tremendous resources that Walmart has, will be able to assist in growing Massmart tremendously. So we've often heard about the benefits of this merger and the parties indicating to us that there'll be huge savings. Walmart claims that in the US it saves consumers about $3,100 per year. We earlier heard the CEO of Massmart say that they expect savings in South Africa of about 5 billion rand for consumers. But the question, honorable members, is how will those savings come across? These are tremendous numbers which they're putting up and making very grand statements, but how will those savings take place? Okay? Walmart claims through improved logistics and supply chain management. We do not think that's all. We think that in order to generate those kinds of savings, and the evidence found in the US, Mexico, and even other countries, shows that it achieves these savings through importing products much, much more than they had done previously. We also think that the savings that Walmart claims it makes in the US is offset by several other things. For instance, there may be increased retrenchments and factory closures in manufacturing, negative employment effects at other retailers, increased poverty and a welfare burden on the state. So in other words, as soon as you have this retailer importing local products, local factories having to close, people being retrenched, then they would...
Is this not part of the...
As I said at the outset of the slide, in the US, Walmart is claiming that it's saving enormous amounts of money for customers.
Mm-hmm.
But there's evidence that this is offset. So I'm talking about what's happening in quite a different place.
Yeah, I agree. But you know, when you talk of high costs and all that, this is a case in terms of what they have submitted so far, and I feel it is really pinching on the merits of the case. I agree there are areas where it's very clear that you are giving evidence in respect of what is happening in Mexico and U.S., which is very clear, but please refrain completely from directly dealing with the issues before the committee.
Chair, thanks. I think the best thing would be to move a couple, I think two slides later.
Okay.
The last few slides of the presentation is a bit of a departure from what had happened in the first section. We're specifically looking at competition legislation. In light of what we've seen in terms of mergers, where do we think are some of the weaknesses? Firstly, with regards to the public interest concerns. We understand that from the newspaper reports, in Busa's submission yesterday, they were very concerned. They believe the Competition Act is not clear regarding public interest concerns. We think that it's quite clear, and you know, we've even quoted the Section 12A(3) of the Act, which I won't read now. But we participated in this merger in terms of this section of the Act. So we think, and in other mergers as well. So we don't really think that that's an area of concern. However, we do believe that there should be a much stronger focus on this area regarding public interest and the impact of mergers on specific industries, on employment, on the ability of small businesses to compete, on the ability of national industries to compete. There should be a much stronger focus on this and the reason we say that is because we should be concerned that price does not become the only reason why we look to or why we are concerned about competition. You know, we are very concerned, and I think the point was well made by the General Secretary of NUMSA, concerned about the situation where we just reduce prices, but at the same time people are retrenched. Who then can afford those products for whom we reduce the prices? We would strongly argue that what South Africa actually needs is jobs, is ways to address poverty and inequality, not just low prices. What we do by depriving people of decent employment is we have a situation where people have to get access to products through borrowing money. often means that workers and their families get fall into debt traps. But that, Chairperson, as you know, was also because of the global economic crisis, because of this huge borrowing that people have to do because they've lost so much of their wages. Another area of competition legislation that we are concerned about, you know, which I term tomorrow versus thereafter. We think that the competition authority should take a longer-term view on the effects of the effects of merger. Cannot only look at the immediate impact, in other words, what is going to happen tomorrow. So several retailers over the last decade or so have bought many smaller competitors. Each merger on its own merits was not problematic. So the Competition Commission would do a calculation and say that in actual fact, this specific merger where the large retailer buys the smaller one is not problematic, is not anti-competitive, and for that reason we won't disallow it. But 10 years later, 15 years later, we have a much more concentrated retail sector than previously. We believe we should try to find and attempt to look at these things in a longer term view to deal with what we call creeping concentration through repeated acquisitions. Other point is on the issue of consumer welfare. You know, I think this merger and other mergers have seen people mention the fact that, you know, consumers will benefit through lower prices, but we say we cannot only focus on the issue of consumer welfare. Prices cannot be the supreme objective. In actual fact, previously in competition legislation, it was not the supreme objective. Only really happened and started in the US in the mid-1980s. Importantly, competition law is not apolitical. Competition law is not objective. It's a political choice. And I think once again it was eloquently put by the General Secretary that we need to make a choice as to what are the kinds of laws that we require to assist in dealing with a triple threat of unemployment, poverty, and inequality. And for that reason, our competition laws should suit our socio-economic objectives and what is appropriate for the growth of South Africa. Chairperson, a couple of last issues. We totally agree with the submission made by Sakau about the necessity for a retail sector strategy. We need to think about what is the role of this sector in our economy. We also need to think about how does this sector contribute to us reaching our national objectives. The final point I wanted to make, Chairperson, was to link to the presentation made by Trelak a little bit earlier. For us, the major thing that arises out of this is the fact that our policy space has been limited due to us signing a trade agreement 10, 15 years ago. It suddenly means that we can't do certain things that we would want to, and the Honourable Member Tsotsetsi alluded to this, that suddenly, you know, we are limited and we would have to go and change laws or change things at the WTO. We'd like to caution, you know, about these kinds of trade agreements that we often think, you know, we sign up, we don't have to worry about it now. But there are, you know, often challenges lying around the corner that we may not be aware of now, that we should try and think about when these kinds of things are done. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much for that presentation. Can you just give me a minute, sir? Thank you very much, Mr. Flock, for the presentation. I'll now give an opportunity to members to ask questions. Dr. Mabasa, Lieutenant Babunduli. Yes.
The impact of a
grant, you know, following the grant line. Thanks, Commissioner.
Thank you, Chairperson, and I would like to welcome the presentation by SAC. Chairperson, I want to give the example of in Mexico, where Walmart was expanding. It would be nice to have the numbers. We know that you've got the numbers of stores. Expansion of the Walmart. It would be nice to have the stores closed at the expense of these other stores created by Walmart, because we just want to go to traffic, and if we can find out how many we closed, so that we can be able to compare. Thanks, Chair. In your presentation, so you have referred to, again on the Mexican model, you referred to oligopolistic structure of four companies. By implication, are you defining mass market? Because in all deliberations, we've been talking about monopoly. But now, you know, in food, we are introducing oligopoly. Is Massmart within that band? If it's within that band, do you believe that the laws that are governing and regulating monopoly are misplaced when it comes to oligopoly companies? The other one, in one of your areas here, you refer to the question of the negative impact on areas where CTFM is based. You talk about coastal provinces, non-metro and former Pakistan. I am not sure what point are you trying to make here about the negativity of the location. Because to me, irrespective where companies are based, if they are producing jobs, they are producing jobs, especially in the, put aside the question of former Pakistan, because we don't have one Pakistan guy.
Thank you. Any other mental?
Yeah, Chairman, to think about the question that if it happens that Walmart commits itself to contributing to rural development and move to rural areas, establish some outlets there. In the students using workers in rural areas will earn the same wages like their colleagues in rural areas.
Thank you. Any other? Mr. Flock, may I hand over to you?
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the members for the questions. The Honourable Mabasa asked about the issue of the monopoly player and the impact that that has on jobs and poverty. You know, our understanding of how something like this would work and perhaps even how, you know, we've seen some features of this, excuse me, in Mexico, is that initially that very big, powerful player with huge amounts of resources are able to get especially cheap products from the East, from very low-wage countries, from countries that perhaps fake their currencies, and thus they have very cheap products. Because they're able to get those very cheap products, they sell those cheap products in their stores, it means that they slowly start to undermine some of those retailers which buy from local manufacturers, where maybe the product is slightly more expensive. It means that there's a kind of an impact not just in the supplier where the order has been cancelled, but also in the other retailer. Then it also means that there's an impact on the other retailers in a different way. They can't offer the same cheap prices because especially smaller retailers don't have go to China, they don't buy 100,000 of a specific product, they only buy 1,000 of it, thus the product is more expensive. Thus the products they offer in their store is not as cheap as the products that the monopoly player or the very large player offers. The result is that slowly but surely you start to lose competitors. And in the end, you have one competitor left. Now, if you have one competitor left, it means that they can do with prices what they want to. And I think that is the concern with monopolies. Chairperson, there was an example of a shopper in, I think, Nebraska in the U.S. who went to a, I'm not sure the state, but who went to a Walmart in one case, found that the prices there were quite different to a Walmart, not far from that, there. The reason the prices were different and the analysis that's been drawn is the one where the prices were more expensive was in an area where there wasn't a lot of competition. They'd already destroyed the competition and created what is called a kind of an economic crater. So because in that crater there's not much else going on in retail, they're able to increase the prices. The one with the lower prices is an area where there was competition. And I think the Honorable Mabasa understand the point that, you know, as soon as you start to dominate, you can do with prices, you know, and not quite what you want to, but you know, you have much more leeway. I think, you know, as I said, through the impact on manufacturers and the impact on other retailers, that of course leads to job losses, pushes people into poverty, to answer the question. The Honorable Mabasa also asked, what is the impact on families when they lose their jobs? Chair, when we interview members, you know, it is really tremendous to just listen to the stories about how they have to cope and the kind of ways they have to find to deal with it. I think that in South Africa we have made great strides in providing the grants and the support that we have, but there are many people that of course don't fall within those areas. The result is that people have to find, you know, very significant ways to survive, and sometimes it means they have to starve themselves in order to ensure that their children get food. Sometimes they have to make a choice between putting their children in a taxi to go to school, or keeping them at home and possibly assisting at home and perhaps earning income there. And these are not the kind of choices I think we want our people to be making. The other part of it, Honorable Mabasa, is the fact that, of course, then you have the burden on the state, because now suddenly more people, the more jobs you lose, the more people need grants, the more people need assistance. Suddenly it means that there's greater burden on the fiscus and less money to put into other areas of the economy. The Honorable Ntuli asked the question about the how many other stores closed, and that's something we don't have with us, but we'll look at those studies and see if we can supply it to the committee. I think that does, you know, raise an important point, and just now the CEO of Massmart was talking about how this merger, the impact of the merger will be the creation of 15,000 jobs. But what is not being mentioned is how will those jobs be created? Going to be taken away from small retailers? Is it going to be taken away from other retailers? So you may not in actual fact have any net growth in the retail sector because they are dominant and able to create jobs, open new stores, but you in actual fact don't have any net growth in the economy. And once again, the General Secretary of NUMSA spoke about the study done which showed that for every two jobs created, there was almost three jobs that were destroyed in the United States. The Honorable Ngonyama asked about the oligopoly. We are concerned that slowly but surely our retail sector is turning into one where the large players totally dominate. And as I said, you know, if you look at the picture 10, 15 years ago, there were many, many more smaller retailers. But we're moving to a situation where, for instance, in the clothing sector, really dominated by, you know, I think about six retailers. And we are concerned that at some stage we reach a point where that oligopoly means that there's much less choice for other companies. the why do we specifically highlight the impact of employment in the rural areas? You know, while it's of great concern when a factory closes in Cape Town or when a factory closes in Durban, there's a bigger chance of that person who is retrenched finding another job. It's not a great chance because we have such high unemployment, but there's a better chance. But when you work in Kuta Tichaba and your factory closes down there, there are many or very few other economic opportunities there, very few other factories there. And that's why we specifically focus on those areas. You are right that it's very bad when it's lost anywhere else. But in those areas, especially bad because there are not many other opportunities. The Honorable Fotsetsi asked the question about Walmart's moving into rural areas and whether the wages would be the same. I can't answer that as we don't organize the retail sector workers. I know, for instance, in the clothing sector, if you work in the city and if you work in the rural areas, there's quite a different wage because of the recognition that those areas are quite far away and there's a difference in the areas. But unfortunately, Chair, I, because we don't organize the workers in retail, I'm not sure about the answer to that question.
Thank you very much, Mr. Flock. I guess that was the last answer or response. We have had your submission and your presentation, and I guess the committee has satisfied themselves for the question. And I guess because they're not actually raising their hands, it shows that. Thank you very much for the interest and your presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Can we then move to our last presenter from F Live Africa? That is Ms. Lakhani. Oh, Mr. Lakhani. I nearly said, hey, what a relief, at least the female voice for the day, but I got disappointed. Okay. Oh. I like that shirt.
Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, Comrades, Friends, Colleagues, firstly, thank you so much for making this opportunity available to hear ordinary civil society. Obviously, this is a tussle of the giants between business and labour, but us ordinary people on the ground feel we need to also make our voice heard. We also share some concerns, and we thought we would raise this with you. So thank you for the opportunity. Earth Life Africa, being a volunteer organization, has no axe to grind. Our branch is unfunded and everybody does everything on a volunteer basis. So it's interesting to note that this comes from a perspective that is beholden to no one. You might ask what an organization that's concerned with environmental and social justice is doing getting involved in economics. We have submitted to the House a supplementary document for later reading about how we think we can shift to a future economy. And we trust the committee will look at that document at a later stage. You've had a long day, so I'm going to try and keep this as brief as possible. And section one of ours, I'm going to put, as we say in international negotiations, I'm going to bracket it because it speaks to the supplier issue as raised by the Competition Board. What we thought we would do is share with the committee Walmart international experience, how people have experienced this company. And we looked at employment, local development, impacts on globalization, and the environment. There's a fascinating study that was done for 21 years that showed, indeed, that for every 100 jobs created by Walmart, 150 jobs are lost. So those kinds of statistics that Labour has presented, we broadly share those concerns. Retail employment drops in the area, and there's a strongly negative existing impact on existing retailers. often their sales decline between 20% and 40%. And we are not talking about the big boys. We're talking about small business. So for example, after a single Walmart opened in Chicago, 82 of the 306 small businesses in the area closed within 2 years. So does it have an impact on the small person? Most certainly it does. The economy will benefit to some extent, one would think. However, a study done in California says the full economic impact of these lost wages and benefits could approach $2.8 million per year. So the overall life cycle impact of an entry like Walmart could have massive negative consequences for our economy. The other thing about a big retailer is that the money that is taken out of the local economy does not circulate in the local economy. A small business will probably keep about 60% of its income in the local economy with its multiplier effects before it leaves, for example, a township or a particular shopping area. Whereas the big box retailer might only allow 40% to circulate locally. So the local economic impact is overall negative. The influx of stores such as this in Contra Costa would cause an annual decline in wages and benefits between $100 and $221 million. And these are all from published material. We've tried to stick to facts rather than opinion. Some of the particular concerns we share are around racial and gender discrimination of Walmart in their history. I think there's a very famous case about the firing of a white sister who had a black boyfriend. And I think it was just last year that a manager at Walmart announced over the PA system, will all the black people please leave the store? So this is the kind of business model and training that we are concerned about. In 2001, six women sued Walmart in California on gender-based employment issues, possibility for promotion. Subsequently, that has grown to 1.6 million current and past employees of Walmart in the biggest class action suit of its kind in the history of the United States. So the gender discrimination is not just surface. It is embedded in the way these stores are managed. And that is of deep concern to us, where our Constitution proudly upholds the rights of our sisters. Even our young people, one of the honorable members had a question earlier about young people. Walmart was fined $205,000 for nearly 1,500 violations of child labor laws in Maine. And this in a country where enforcement is relatively strict. So the lack of respect is what is of deep concern to us. If you look at the Walmart handbook, the things that Walmart store managers have given, it's very clear because it says Walmart is anti-unionization, full stop. And the line that really gets
well,
madam.
I would really, because in keeping with what the conditions that I have put before, I think we should refrain from what this is a case that has been put already against. Yes, so I would love if you could be a bit broader and address issues of measure in general if you can, and then this particular measure in relation to economic development, even if it's social development,
right,
around manufacturing, how does this impact on that, and in energy, not specifically on the issues that are before the law, the court.
Thank you for the guidance, Chair. I'll simply skip a little bit, that's quite fine. Something interesting also found in a study done on Walmart and poverty, it found that civic capacity in the areas where they organize is impacted upon negatively. And we pride ourselves on having a vibrant civil society in this country. So one dreads to think what might happen to people who are active on the ground. Another study that we were concerned about was that showed unequivocally that Walmart raises family poverty. And that again is a very scary situation. We're already, many of us, under pressure. Many of us go without on a day-to-day basis. And to consider that this might be threatened in the short, medium, and long term even further is of deep concern. This wasn't a study about poverty done over 1 year or in one particular area, but it was independent studies that looked over 11 years. So it wasn't just a once-off snapshot of the impact on poverty in the area. So we commend that to the committee's area of study. For example, it's not unheard of for Walmart to demand access to suppliers' financial records and say your margins are too high. And that, we think, actually is not good business practice at all. A good example was someone in the umbrella business who wanted a 5% increase. Walmart said we expected a 5% decrease and come back. And he came back with a 2% increase. They shut him out and bought from China. So this is the kind of thinking that is very fearful for people in our country when you consider the impact it could have. As a justice organization around issues of environment, around air, water, soil, sanitation, housing, food, energy, we find that some of the practices are questionable. Labeling non-organic food as organic to climb into the middle class market, we think that's problematic. Also, Walmart has a consistent record, according to research, that they tend to fund political candidates who are anti-environment. And our constitution very proudly allows us the right to an environment that is not harmful to our health.
Madam Chair. You know why I want you to refrain from directly talking to issues that have been put before? I understand that you're trying to give examples that are going to relate, for instance, something that you feel that if really this is allowed, is going to result in, you know, in the same situations that, you know, have been experienced in other areas. So, but I want us not to really directly, you know, push for a case against Walmart, you see, because why I'm saying that is because I know there's already that case before that is against, and that has been put obviously before. The statistics are helpful a lot. Some of the information that you are giving is quite helpful, but anything related to the, I think there are five conditions that are put to there, we should please refrain unless we talk under chief.
Thank you, Chair. I have looked at the statement,
okay.
And I'm fairly confident that just the facts that we are sticking to do not transgress what you have suggested, but thank you. I think the kind of problems people have in our country is we think we cannot afford environmental protection as a developing country. But the fact of the matter is not only does this impact on the quality of life of our people, but actually can grow our economy. For example, recently the United States has passed a toxics rule that will help reduce, you know, mercury and other dangerous chemicals. And they found it would add $139 billion to the economy, create an additional 115,000 jobs, and save in health costs something like $4.5 billion. So we think the notion of environmental impact, which has its direct social consequences when our air, water, and soil are polluted by companies, have a direct impact on our people and generally on the poorest of the poor, who are least able to defend themselves. It's pretty much why Earth South Africa exists. We have a long list here of fines, of pollution, of transgressions in many different states by many stores along history, comments by attorney generals that say things like, this is a pattern nationally. And I think, just to keep it short, I'm sure the committee will read all of these details for themselves. And just so I don't wish to transgress Madam Chair's rulings, I think I'll keep it even shorter and simply say that our research, and you will notice that our submission is deeply referenced, even though we only had a day and a half to pull this together, and we've chosen to stick to the facts. So this is all from published material. And we really have tried to refrain from attacking anything in particular other than facts in front of you. And secondly, you'll notice at the end of our document, we don't have any specific requests or recommendations for you. And I think it's really quite simple as to why we've chosen that path. We are concerned that we might be inviting an enterprise that may not be a good corporate citizen in our country. We're concerned about the deepening and widening of poverty. We share the concerns of the people in labor who have spoken before us. And we felt it best to ask you to rather consider with your hearts, in the spirit of those who have gone before us, as to whether this direction is indeed one that will be best for our people, for our country, and for our environment. We ask, please, that you consider not just the economics, but also the moral, ethical, and principles that are entrenched in our constitution, that are entrenched in our history, that today allow me to sit in Parliament to address you, which 20 years ago, of course, was unheard of. Surely in that spirit, we need to be very careful about what we do, because for some short-term gains, we might be putting into place some long-term harm to our people. And that, I'm sure, we would not want at our doors. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lakhani. I'm certain that most of the issues that you've raised here are forming the basis for the argument in the appeal case and has been actually during the tribunal hearing. That's why I've been cautioning, so that please don't take it that I've been trying just to stop you. I've been cautioning because I'm aware I've been following some of them. So I want also to just as a way of information, as a committee, we are not going to influence any decision on the measure. That's not the intention of this particular hearing. The intention is to open up space for people to talk. And we are very happy that this, at Live Africa, you were able to come and present yourself and your case here. Obviously, we will be writing a report on the hearings themselves as a committee, and that report will be tabled before Parliament, and there will be then, if necessary, be discussed or debated by Parliament as an independent arm of state. And but that depends on what the authorities in the legislature feel that we discuss or not. So, but we are really taking into cognizance whatever that is presented here. Hence, I'm going to allow members to ask questions and make comments where possible.
Thank you very much. Your presentation is amazing. My question is, will you, as an NGO, accept funding from Walmart if they are to offer you?
Life Africa for that. Okay. At least you've been commended by a member. You feel happy?
I feel like we used to find, like in the park, once you send dogs, not allowed.
Okay. Over to you for this one.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, honorable members. The short answer is, will we take funding from Walmart? Definitely not. It doesn't matter how many millions they would give us, we would not touch it. We do not take any money from corporates that are polluting, that have bad social or economic or environmental history or records that impact negatively on our rights as South Africans, which is why we remain predominantly volunteer. We have occasionally taken grant funding, but even if we attempt to take as little as 2,000 rand from a local or international corporate, we have to clear it with all our branches that they are happy with the track record of that particular corporate. And to date, in 22 years, we once took 2,000 rand for a first prize in a photographic competition from a local corporate. So the answer is no, we cannot be bought. I think what's really important is that we like to think that we do what we do because we are passionate about our people and the quality of life. We like to believe that we approach our work with compassion because that is what our leadership has taught us, that with passion and compassion, anything is possible. And if ordinary people like you and I do not do what we can to help the poorest of the poor, to help the average worker, to look forward to a South Africa where our sisters can walk freely, our children are not hungry, and we don't do something about it, then we are as guilty as any nasty corporate. So I think that's probably the short answer about where we come from. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lakane. Babu Gonyama, you have an afterthought comment?
No,
okay.
Absolutely. No, I just wanted to ask a question about greenwashing and green on the t-shirt. Is there any kind of delivery choice in the t-shirt?
Looking on a green chair.
Well, we are glad that the House respects the green movement so much that you see it every day. This was really just to respect Utata's birthday this week. That's pretty much all it was. You know, because that is where we derive our inspiration from people like yourselves who make these pronouncements that lead us into our future. The leaders have gone before us and hopefully are yet to come. And I think, quite frankly, greenwash is something that we all hear about. And it does happen all the time. You know, let's clean up the litter, but let's not stop making litter, you know. So these are the kinds of things that we're very well aware of, and that's another deep concern of ours. Thank you, Comrade Chair, member.
Okay. That would be all. Thank you very much, Mr. Lakane, for the presentation, and I think education, I think we've learned a lot ever since we started yesterday. And we'll continue to learn tomorrow. As we say, we are members of Parliament and we are open to learning. We have open ears and hearts so that we can learn and be able, so that in order actually to serve you better. That's what we do. Through your presentations, through your submissions, we learn and we are able then to be empowered to help each other. Thank you very much for your presentation.
Madam Chair, honourable members, thank you very much for this opportunity. And all we ask of you is to rather follow your hearts than your pockets. But thank you so much for making this space available to us. I couldn't resist. And we look forward to the outcome of these deliberations. Thank you very much.
Whatever that means, I'm not too sure what they're laughing at, but I thought we were following our hearts, we were following our minds, because you have to follow both. but I don't know about the pockets. But with, that's why we are here. We've been trying to do our best to help our people, and we'll continue to do so. Yeah, we do earn a salary at the end of the month, every month. That's some of us, that's the only income we have anyway. And we will do our best to serve the interests of the people. We have committed to the Constitution and to that. Thank you very much. Members, may we remain after I have adjourned the meeting here for today. This colleague was our last presentation for the day. Mr. Mapai could not pitch up. We've tried to contact him. Unfortunately, there was nowhere to use. It's an individual. We welcomed anybody who wanted to make a submission here. So tomorrow we'll continue with our hearing. And as you all know, that tomorrow is our last day for the hearing. We are not going to be deterred. We're going to continue with the hearing. And as I indicated, we will be learning and we'll continue to learn in order to serve people better. Tomorrow, there are also few of the, quite a lot actually tomorrow that we're seeing. And our meeting will start at 9 until 5. So we will see you tomorrow. The hearings will be in the same venue. And we'll appreciate it if you can be members on time so that we can be able to finish and allow you to go to your constituencies. Thank you very much. We can adjourn for today and see you tomorrow.